Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
One of the things that most of us deal with here on this planet is the crisis of identity. And that whole syndrome that goes with who am I really? It works something like this. My mind tells me I should be a certain way. So then I attempt to do all those things that match up to what my mind tells me. Except I'm not happy because I don't do those things. But then I've got this should hanging over me. I should do that because it's really quite ideal. And if anyone could do that, they would be really perfect. And we set ourselves up for the failure in that process. We can do things rather excellent here in terms of excellence, but perfect, it isn't going to be here because we're not in a state of static beingness where it's just still. We're in a state of movement, and the state of movement brings with it the fal-de-ral of knocking things over, which is a failure, not performing, which is a failure, not wanting to perform, which is another failure. In other words, everything we decide to do or not do, we can call a failure. So we then run the identity of a failure, but then something inside says, but I'm not a failure either. But then I'm not doing my spiritual exercises, so I'm a spiritual failure. And then they come to me and they say, I'm not getting anywhere with my spiritual exercises. I'm not getting the results that I'm after. And I say, okay, well, what are the results that you're after? And some of them will lay out to me this far out, I don't know quite how to describe it, far out thing, place, feeling, idea, color. And I say, why do you want that? Why? What is that going to do for you? Well, if I accomplish that, then I will be spiritual. Said, no, you won't. It has very little to do with spiritual. It has to do with manipulating neural energy through the eyes and the brain. And stress and strain can do that, and drugs and hallucinations and illusions can do that. It might not have anything to do with spirituality. Then they say, well, you mean I'm not a failure in my SEs? I'll say, no, I'm not saying that you're not a failure. I'm just saying that you're not a failure that way. They say, oh, then I am a failure. I say, no, I'm not saying that you're a failure. Well, am I successful? I say, well, are you doing your SEs? I say, well, no. And I say, well, then guess what? And they say, well, then I'm a failure. And I say, no, you're not even a failure if you don't do them, because you got to be aware that you're not doing them, and being aware you're not doing them is part of doing them. And they go, then I have a little success. And I say, just a little. But bring your little success to me, and I'll amplify it for you. If you bring nothing, then I can amplify nothing. Can't do anything more than what you do in terms of any form of presentation of your life to the world. Even if they brought the failure, we could do something with that. But they've got to be able to turn to the traveler in times of good as well as times of stress, not for anything to happen. That's not the process for anything to happen, because nothing is really going to happen here. I mean, nothing's ever really happened here. It's the same thing over and over and over, and it's just different people's faces and different names, but for the most part, the person is doing their same drama on whoever they're living with or whoever they want to live with. They go into the same numbers and they run the same thing out there. And sometimes they get sick and tired of being tired and sick, and they quit it for a while and think that things have changed. And it isn't too long until they go back to the customary way of doing things, which is called the habitual response. That habitual response then becomes this type of a thought process. Here I am, back, being drunk again. I'm just nothing but a no good drunk. The question arises in that. Are there such things as good drunks? Are there such things as rich drunks and wealthy? Or are they all just no good? It's like, gee, do we have to ask questions? Yes, if you're going to label yourself with some form of crisis identification, it might be nice to label yourself in a very accurate way so that when you're called, you can respond in the state of emergency. I know it's difficult that every time you do something, it's wrong, and then you're afraid to do something again because you know it's just going to be wrong again, and you can never please the person. I have a very dear friend that I used to buy a birthday present for. And it seemed like no matter what the present wasn't what he wanted. That was sort of hard because he told me what it was he wanted, and then I went and bought it. But then in the meantime, he changed his mind. And I hopped all over him about changing his mind about the present. And he said, well, aren't I allowed to change my mind? And it's, yes, you are allowed to change your mind. And I just sort of said, and I'm allowed not to have to conform to birthday present syndromes. And so that ended up. Next year, it came around, said, I just called you up so you could wish me happy birthday. I said, that's very nice of you. I'm glad that you did that. And he said, well? I said, well? He said, are you going to wish me happy birthday? I said, no. You've done that, and that's enough. You're the only one that knows how to wish you the happy birthday that you want to have. And no matter how I say it or what I do, it's not going to be as satisfactory as you doing it, because you know exactly what it is you want. What did you give yourself? And he told me, I said, I've never thought of that. He says, yeah, very few people would have, because I'm unusual in a lot of ways and have peculiar tastes, but I just got it for myself and treated myself and took care of myself. And I was feeling so relieved to think I don't have to make this person feel good by giving them the best birthday present they can ever have. I haven't to this day given them another birthday present. Christmas present, maybe. It depends on whether I think they're going to change their mind or not. Okay, what that leaves me in a position then is being clairvoyant to look into a person's mind to see what they're going to do or not do. Who wants to waste their time doing that? That's called boring. Because in 3 seconds, anybody in this room, anybody listening to me, watching me, can change their mind from one point of view to another point of view to a radical point of view. The difficulty we have is that we can't sustain the point of view from a center of beingness. So we sustain our point of view from a center of jealousy, which is a statement of saying, I'm going to lose, or a center of hate, which is a statement of saying, I hate you because you have something on me that you can use against me to hurt me, so I hate you. From a statement of polarization called, here I am and there you are, and let's keep it that way, but don't be far away from me. These type of identificational crises that we go through are all made under emotional duress or stress, positive or negative. There are times when the Spirit moves in and through you, that your emotions, your feelings will come up very high and strong, and very powerful. And in those few moments, you can commit yourself to some of the most outlandish, outrageous behavioral actions that you can imagine, because when that flows through you, you are Superman beyond Superman. You're more than supernatural, you're supernatural. And you can accomplish a tremendous amount in that. But then we all know that that emotion moves away because nothing is permanent here. It's not a perfect process. It moves in and out. And when it moves away, we're left with an emotional decision that's got little things tied onto it that we hate. And we have to deal with it. And we don't want to deal with it. We want to put it aside, and we opt for another emotional approach. And we think because we've opted for another approach and it feels good, we don't have to do this one that we started. All we're doing is delaying the payment of that till later, because these things accumulate down the line. Let me give an example of accumulation. The young girl grows up in the family, and there's been a lot of discord and unhappiness, and she's identified with it and brought it into herself. And she goes on into high school, and she's not the prettiest girl around and doesn't get dated to everything, and that says, I'm not pretty, I'm not worthy, I'm not wanted, I'm not desired. And she feels bad about herself and is always picking at her face to prove the point she's not pretty. And then she goes on to college and decides that she will study real hard because she's not getting the dates, because she's not pretty and she's not worthwhile. And anyway, it's been going on for years. And then she finally does get married and has a baby and wonders if it's really hers, because how could she have such a beautiful thing, because she's so bad and she's so terrible and have such a terrible heritage. And all this time, these emotional accumulations are building and building and building and building. And one night, her husband comes in, and he's upset over something, and she's been upset that day because generally she's upset. Things aren't going her way. They aren't matching up to her ideal of the emotional energy she has. And she says, I burned your dinner. And he says, that figures. And she just goes off a rocker. She goes crazy. They call an ambulance. They take her away all strapped up, put under psychiatric care. And he says, what did you say to her that kicked her off? And he says, I said, it figures. He said, nobody goes crazy when you say it figures. I said, she did. There must be more to it than that. Ask her. She's the one that has accumulated this. She had a lot going when she was very little, and through high school and through college. And when I got to her, you know, she was a little neurotic, but I liked the idea. It was kind of exciting. Didn't know what she was going to do next. It was nifty. But I didn't want her to go crazy. I mean, all she did was burn the dinner, but it was about the 400th time she's burned it. So when she told me, I said, it figures. The psychiatrist says, well, that's not enough to set anybody off. Well, she's also been studying this particular course of a certain thing. Do you think that did it? The psychiatrist says, I'll bet you that has to be it, because we're looking for an isolated instance out of this person's life that kicked them off, instead of looking at the person's life, because they started kicking off from the moment they were born in that separation from our mother. We start to feel the alienation and the polarization instantly. And from that moment on, we attempt to run identification with something that's stable, that's something that's going to be permanent there for us. And all mom has to do is yell at us or slap us for reaching for something, and then we immediately start conforming our personality to match how mom wants us to do it, or dad. And some of us were able to do it real well. We either did it real well when they were there, or we didn't do anything while they were there. And then when they left, then we did it, called sneaking around behind their back. Then we were caught sneaking, and we were called little sneaks. Then somebody says, I love you. You think, how could you love a little sneak who this, you can't love me, and I won't let you love me, and I won't let you get close to me. And the person says, can't help it. I love you anyway. Now it's miserable because I can't be close to you. Would you let me be close? So why would you want to be close with me? Because I love you. But if you knew me, you wouldn't love me. That may be true, but I don't know you, and I love you. Well, I don't want you to get to know me, because then you'll hate me. You're not giving me a chance. You're trying to control my behavior to suit what you think I should and should not do in relationship to you. I don't want you to control my behavior. I don't want my behavior to be offensive to you. But I would like to be able to come up and say, hi, I love you, and you don't want me to. You want me to write it on a piece of paper and put it under a rock, and you'll pick it up on Thursdays. I'm not going to do that. Well, if you really loved me, you'd do it. So now comes the testing phase. So he says, all right. And he writes a note, puts it under the rock, and sure enough, Thursday she comes along, gets it. He did it. He really does love me. But maybe he just did that. Maybe he really doesn't love me. Can this person win with her? No, she's got it all wired. She's wired backwards. Then he walks away from her. And then she comes back to her perfected ideal of what she should really be and strives earnestly for that, trying to please once again the ideal, denying her feelings, denying the emotions, denying the thought, and striving for this other object, and it never comes present. Why? Because it's unreal. Then somebody comes along and promises drugs or mushrooms or some other way to attempt to come back to ourselves, and we'll take it rather than sit with the emotional disturbance that we produce that hurts. Because I don't like the emotional disturbance. That's the trap of identification. I don't like the emotional disturbance. Emotions aren't set up to disturb you, but what happens is you look at life and you say, this should be the result. Bop, right here. And it shows up like this. You're looking for the fist doubled, and it shows up as a flat hand. What it says is, you didn't see accurately what was really going on, and while it was going on, you ran an assumption about what it's to be, and your assumption was inaccurate based upon the evidence that you had. Then they say, don't you correct me. Don't you process me. Don't you tell me. It's like, I don't have to. Look at the results that you've got, and it'll tell you yourself. Oh, yeah. If I just look at the results, can anybody else see those results? Mm-hmm. Do they know that I do that type of thing? Yeah. How do they know that? They can see you do it. Can they see it when I do it in my mind? No, they don't care when you just do it in your mind. Why not? Because they can't read your mind. They can't smell it out. They don't care. As far as they know it, you're just cuckoo up there, waiting for the door to open to go, cuckoo, cuckoo. And that's all they're concerned about. When you strike the hour, they'll go home. That's all their interest is with you. But you see, I want them to be able to share my mind. I want them to be able to share my emotions. I want. And that just keeps running, and the person never accomplishes the sharing because they're so busy wanting, they don't set up a form by which it can be shared. I want to share a message with you. I must bring myself, put it in this chair, open my mouth, and put it forward. That's the method by which I do it. Why couldn't I just sit home in my own home and let you just get it? Well, you're so busy running identity crises on yourself that you won't listen. If you did listen, you hear somebody saying, time out, time, shower, go shower. Don't do what you're doing. Stop. And the person's saying, I don't know who's talking in there, but I'm not paying attention to that because I've got to measure up to the standards and the rules and the regulations that I have set up that are perfect. Then you go talk to a therapist, and the therapist says, where'd you come up with such ridiculous standards? And you leave the therapist saying, they don't know what they're talking about. They couldn't help me. They wouldn't agree with me. Well, if you're after agreement, go look in the mirror and talk to yourself. Oh. Do you think they did know what they were talking about? Maybe not. But they might have known that your rules that you ran were not effective for you because they were not producing what you wanted. See, it's not only that, it doesn't produce what I want. I can't get other people to produce what I want. That's the second emotional trap of identification. If I do this, you should have done this. If I went to A, you should have gone to B. Why didn't you do that? And you know what the other person says? I didn't feel like it. And you say, what have feelings got to do with it? Feelings have got a lot to do with it because that's what I use not to do it. Well, that's not fair. You should use your intellect because I did. Okay. When they say, I think you should do this, the other person doesn't do it. Why didn't you do it? Don't tell me you felt like it. No, I thought it over and just decided I didn't want to. I thought about it. Did they really? Probably not. Did they run the same thing? Probably. They just changed vocabulary. Why? That's what you demanded. You demanded agreement in vocabulary instead of how are you going to do this? What are the results going to be? What's your method? See, far too often, the whole process of self-identification is you be my clone so that I'll know that I'm doing good because you'll do the same thing and therefore it'll be okay because we're both doing the same thing. Well, golly, a lot of people in the mental institutions are doing the same thing. And you really can't say that that's all that bright. And a lot of water buffaloes run through the jungles stampeding, and I don't know if we could say that's all that bright. It might be more important that we say, wait a minute, I'm just going to see how I feel about it. I'm going to think it over. Because after I come out of this emotional high and I go down pretty low, how am I going to feel when I get there? Am I still going to feel like I can do it? And you can intellectually dive into the emotional maelstrom, go down at the bottom, take a look and say, no, I couldn't do it then because that enthusiastic energy is what I needed to keep it going. And once that's gone, that ends it. Then don't start it. Just drop it away. Say, oh, no, it didn't work. Now you say, well, what if I go down to the emotional doldrums and look and I say, no, I can still do it okay. Even if I go into depression, I can still accomplish that. Take off and do it. You've got a sure winner. No matter what happens, you're going to pull it off. You don't always have to be hyping yourself up in order to do it. Does that mean that you don't move on your highs? I'd be very careful about moving on an emotional high unless I've looked at a way to sustain it. Because if it starts to go down, I've got to have some way to bring it back up again. Be skeptical of yourself and your involvement with yourself emotionally and mentally. Being skeptical means check it out. Look for an alternative in how you can do it. See, most of us make these type of negative decisions. I've got money, and I don't know, the roof is leaking, or whether I should pay the insurance on the car. Those are both negative decisions. The only decision that's positive is to keep the money in the bank or use it for yourself, but I've either got to pay for the roof or pay the car insurance. All we're doing then is hoping against hope that it won't rain anymore or you won't get in a wreck. But you can't do both. And so you sit in the moment of success having failure internally as it's reflected from there into you. You might say, well, which would you do? Guess. Well, what's more important is, what would you do? Gee, I don't know. They're both bad, aren't they? No, they just are negative decisions that we end up making. We rarely end up making a positive decision because we won't look at the alternative of how to do it. Well, what's an alternative? Just patch the roof where it's leaking, and it won't take a lot of money. Yeah? And shop around for cheaper insurance. Beirush Beishan.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.